When spring unfolds the beechen leaf and sap is in the bough, when light is on the wildwood stream and wind is on the brow, when stride is long and breath is deep and keen the mountain air, come back to me and say my land is fair.
When spring is come to garth and field and corn is in the blade, when blossom like a shining snow is on the orchard laid, when shower and sun upon the earth with fragrance fill the air, I'll linger there and will not come because my land is fair.
Together
we will take
the
road
that leads
into
the west.
And far away
we will find
a land
where both
our hearts may rest. Sorry, it's really hard to do unison on a Zoom call. We should have had a metronome going.
Welcome to A Sacred Fellowship, where we are reading out loud the works of J.R.R. Tolkien using sacred practices, including laughter. We are using these texts to learn, to reflect on our lives, and to think about life's big questions. We believe that through treating classics like The Lord of the Rings as sacred, we will learn to treat one another as sacred. Hi, Catherine.
Hello, Lorianne. And I never thought of laughter as a sacred practice. I always think of it as a therapy, which could be both. Anyway, this is episode 49, where your hosts, Catherine Olsen and Lorianne Schwenk, will be discussing the fourth chapter in The Treason of Isengard, Treebeard, through the theme of trust. Settle into the arms of an Ent or in your car seat and join us. Reading in community is an essential part of what it means for us to read a text as sacred, and we're glad you're here to continue building community with us.
So how are you, Catherine? Do you have any dungeon or tower for this week?
Well, my tower is that it's been a weekend where I went to a performance on Friday and a performance on Saturday.
And really and different stuff too.
Yeah, I went to Les Miserables at the theater on Friday, and then on Saturday I got to go to the symphony. And this Thursday I'm actually going to be reviewing an audio drama through a local theater company, but that's completely online. But it was nice to be able to applaud with people in public.
Oh, fantastic, and stimulating and all of those things. That's wonderful.
Yes, on the other hand, this is not exactly a dungeon, but I have something to look forward to, but I have to look forward for 2 months to it. How about you?
I can appreciate that. I don't really have a deep dungeon, but the same thing. I've got something coming up in May, and the reason I can look forward to that is my tower, which is I got my second vaccination shot yesterday, and so far not a single side effect. I feel fine. So it's been 24 hours. So I'm just letting those hours click by and seem fine. So I am grateful and hope folks out there are also getting vaccinated and feeling a little safer and able to do things like concerts and sporting events and things like that. So.
Don't get me started on the Tower of Sporting Events, since the Red Sox are now 5-game winning streak and first in the league. But like I said, don't get me started. I could go on for ages.
Red Sox fans understand that tower and dungeon are interchangeable very quickly, very frequently. Okay. So our theme for this chapter is trust, and it is my turn to tell a story. And I had a really moving event this week where a person asked me to help them set up their appointment for a vaccine. And she has a phone, but she doesn't use the web really on it. She really just uses it for the phone and for texting and things like that. So the link in the email wouldn't go to a site for her. She would have had to set something up. And I'll say English is not her first language as well. So I helped her at work. And I just have to say, I really am very grateful for her trust in me, to trust me to help her and to trust me to do this for her. It meant a lot. It meant a lot about our friendship. It meant a lot about kind of what I see as the stupidity of walls. I'll just put it there. And including the fake walls that we might put up, of whatever those things are, culture, language, age, experience, all of those things. So I just really felt honored that she trusted me to help her, especially when she said she'd asked her son to come over and he couldn't. So she said, don't worry, I'll ask Lorianne. So that's when the tears flew. And so that felt really, really moving. And as we get into the report from the Gammers, we'll talk a little bit more about trust, but tell us about what's on Second Breakfast now.
Well, Second Breakfast, I finally got around to explaining just exactly what I meant by associating Aragorn with Thomas Hardy's The Darkling Thrush. So I did a deeper dive into that, and I will be letting Lorianne take over for the next Second Breakfast, as she has contributed so many wonderful themes to it. But you can find that, as always, on our blog page from asacredfellowship.com. You can easily find it from the front page by just looking for Second Breakfast. And of course, there are other things like news and links to our social media pages on that site as well.
And it is very easy to make a comment. So please have your Second Breakfast and then give us the dessert of your comments, please.
Yes. All right.
Okay. Well, thank
also,
you.
Also, I have a private theory that, not theory, but suggestion that the line, don't worry, I'll last Lorianne, should be some kind of podcast slogan.
Oh, we've got to get some merch.
We really do. Such as those pint glasses.
Those pint glasses. I'm looking into those. I am. Trust me. So speaking of trust, we have our report from the Gammers. There's a number of words in this chapter. Trust goes back to about the 12th century, and it means that something is reliable, or you can rely on its veracity, integrity, or the virtues of someone or something, frequently religious, so frequently about faith or about God or something like that. So it is a very special, important word. It shares Germanic roots and then goes back to the Proto-Indo-European, D-E-R-U, deru. And from that, you can see the German word for hard, D-U-R, dur, endurance, durability. So there is a common root for those kinds of words and trust. And that was very interesting. Then we find out that the old Took, the very old Took, his name was Gerontius. And that's a Latin and Greek portmanteau for old man. So there we are.
Yes.
Gerontology. And
it's related to the word for geriatric.
Exactly. Geriatric, gerontology, all of those things. And so that's where his name comes from. And it's interesting because he's also got the Latin name Peregrine. So this is an interesting branch of the Hobbit tree, I think. We get a few landscape words. They're always new to me. We have dingle. So that is a deep dell or secluded, wooded, can even be related to dungeon, dingle for dungeon. Germanic would be tunk, like cellar. So some kind of space hollow that is lower, that is down below other things. And a garth, you got to mention that in the Song of the Entwives there, is a small piece of enclosed ground, and it is related to the modern word yard. Then there is the mention of corn, and I certainly would have thought that that was out of place. What's the word? Anachronistic. There we go.
I think it's more that the British have not colonialized that part of the world at this point in the mythological history of England.
True, but in any case, in the Germanic and English tongues, corn is any grain or any seed of a cereal plant. It is related to kernel, and it would also have meant the leading crop of a district. So whatever the leading crop of a district was, that was corn. So I thought that was interesting. Very lave, nice. Of course, means to wash, and that's just from the beginning of time. And that is L-A-V is just always to do with wash. And it's interesting how that has changed a little bit into English, but we can hear that, of course, in things like lavatory or French words, lavage, things like that. So there's a lot of lave around. Besom is fascinating, and it is a bundle of twigs. And that one, the origin is unknown. The Gammers couldn't find a deeper root for that. And it is interesting because I recall it used in Harry Potter as an insult.
I remember that as well.
Yes, McGonagall is called an old besom. And I wonder if a broom could then also be a synecdoche for witch. And if that is what was meant in that usage. But at any rate, a broom and is a besom. So it's any kind of broom made of a bundle of twigs. And then we have the plant sloe, S-L-O-E. And anybody who drinks gin knows that sloe. It is the fruit of the blackthorn. Or read certain books. It is the fruit of the blackthorn. And it's related to livid and related to blue-purple. And I need to do more of a dive. The Gammers were in a hurry at this point, and they said I'd asked enough questions and it was time for them to go. But if someone is slow-eyed, it often would mean that they are angry or purple with rage. Mm-hmm. So that sense of being livid is related to slow. And I find that interesting because I think it's a marvelous fruit. and I think it has some medicinal properties, but perhaps I'll throw something on the Facebook page or Second Breakfast about that. But that brings us to the end of our report from the Gammers.
Yes, the library is closed now.
It is closed, exactly. And so let us discuss the theme in this long and marvelous chapter. What a nice little break from torture.
Oh, yes.
Where did you first see Trust?
Well, not to be unoriginal, but I first saw Trust in the first paragraph. We have, meanwhile, the hobbits went with as much speed as the dark and tangled forest allowed, following the line of the running stream, westward and upwards up towards the slopes of the mountains, deeper and deeper into Fangorn. Slowly their fear of the orcs died away and their pace slackened. A queer stifling feeling came over them as if the air were too thin or too scanty for breathing. At last Merry halted. "We can't go on like this," he panted. "I want some air." "Let's have a drink at any rate," said Pippin. "I'm parched." He clambered onto a great tree root that wound down into the stream and, stooping, drew up some water into his cupped hands. It was clear and cold, and he took many draughts. Merry followed him. The water refreshed them and seemed to cheer their hearts. For a while they sat together on the brink of the stream, dabbling their sore feet into legs and peering round at trees that stood silently about them, rank upon rank, until they faded away into gray twilight in every direction. I had a hard time with this paragraph at the first because there's a sense of slight complacency, because I don't know about you, but if I had just been held captive by orcs and then chased away by riders of Rohan, I would not be stopping for a good many miles. And possibly it has been a good many miles, but Merry is the one who takes the point on them having a kind of respite and dabbling their sore feet and legs and waiting to take a few drafts from the stream. And I think it has a lot to do with his familiarity with the old forest and his kind of discernment of whether or not this is as malevolent as places in that area.
Right. I mean, I see them trusting following the line of the stream. Mm-hmm. That they trust that. So they're trusting this landscape. Pippin is trusting Merry's familiarity, since he's the one who admits to having studied maps back in Rivendell. And they trust the water. I mean, we know from The Hobbit, there are places where you just don't drink the water, but they trust that this water will be good, and it turns out to be more than good. And I found something quite fun in this, in the next piece, because They're looking around and all of that. And Pippin says, "I suppose you haven't lost us already. We can at least follow the course of the stream." How different from before when he doesn't trust Mary way back in the early chapters. It hasn't taken you long to lose us.
Yes.
So I thought that was such an interesting thing to revisit, that at the very beginning, when they're still really in Eriador, Pippin is accusing Mary of having lost them. And here it just sounds more conversational. Well, I suppose you haven't lost us already. He trusts Mary, and he trusts that they will follow the course of the stream and be fine. Mm-hmm. I am very curious about the stuffy air, because at first it sounds like it is thin, that the air were too thin or too scanty, and then later it says stuffy. If it were elevation, I could see the thin and scanty. And I assume they've climbed a bit, but do you know why the air is stuffy? Do you know what that's about?
It's not expressly explained in the text as far as I've been able to find. It kind of reminds me of Gandalf in The Hobbit saying that there is something the matter with Bilbo. There is content to the air in this. We have, of course, the air itself, but also the different pollens and different spores that you will find in any forest. And so I feel as though that is the reference that they're making with stuffy. Also, they may have just a slight sense of this from having been out in the open plains on the Gap of Rohan versus in this enclosed space, as healthful as they find it anyway.
Yes. Well, they've been out in the open along the river, really since leaving Lothlorien. So this is the first time they're really in an enclosed place. Very interesting. Where was your next place for trust?
It was actually towards the end of that page, but the sun at any rate must peep in sometimes, said Mary. It does not look or feel at all like Bilbo's description of Mirkwood. That was all dark and black in the home of dark black things. This is just dim and frightfully tree-ish. You can't imagine animals living here at all or staying for long. No, nor hobbits, said Pippin, and I don't like the thought of trying to get through it either. Nothing to eat for 100 miles, I should guess. So I love that they are trusting this forest, if nothing else, because it is not like the evil things that Bilbo has told them in the stories when they were growing up.
There you go. Well, and isn't that nice that they paid attention?
Yeah.
I think for me, it goes a little while before I see something, though I did want to comment on how they notice black smoke going up. So I assume that is the remains of their torturers. And then there's the first speech from Treebeard, which is where I next felt some trust. Almost felt you liked the forest. That's good. That's uncommonly kind of you, said a strange voice. Turn around and let me have a look at your faces. I almost feel that I dislike you both, but do not let us be hasty. So I see there that he trusts himself, maybe, or he trusts his own judgment that he doesn't need to strike first and ask questions later, or he trusts that he doesn't need to be hasty. So I love this introduction of Treebeard, and I see some great trust in there already.
I love that he says that is uncommonly kind of you. It almost makes me feel as though I almost feel that I should dislike you both, but do not let us be hasty. It seems as though if it were not for their gentleness and kindness and obvious lack of ill will in entering this forest, he would have treated them a little more like what he would treat the orcs. And so the uncommonness of their kindness is a lovely thing. And I don't think it's necessarily a direct response to, I almost felt like I liked the place, which is what Pippin says about the forest. I think this is, he has been forming this opinion for some time now, whether by his own eyes or by the eyes of other trees that report to him. But he has finally decided to speak up because it's a good conversation starter.
I like that. Oh, wonderful, wonderful. I love Pippin's memory later, his first impression. Such a beautiful, beautiful paragraph there. One felt there was an enormous well behind their eyes, his eyes, filled up with the ages of memory and long, slow, steady thinking, but their surface was sparkling with the present. was it just beautiful, beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like he can trust Treebeard enough already because he can look so deeply into his eyes, and that, you know, is it becomes a memory he won't ever forget.
Mm-hmm. Well, the line about it, their surface was sparkling with the present. Mm-hmm. One of the things I always talk about when I'm teaching writing is that for every one page of actual content that you have on the manuscript, you should have three pages of context behind it. Mm. And this is not to say make your books as obscure in their references as possible. It is to say that when you have someone take an action, you should have the context for what has led them to that action. And so that's where I see the ages of memory and long, slow, steady thinking, but their surface was sparkling with the presence. Mm-hmm. Present, not presence.
Right. No, it's beautiful. Pippin is no longer feeling afraid. He felt mm-hmm. a curious suspense, but not fear. And I love that. So this is growing trust. And what a difference. He's not been grabbed by this creature and then run off. There is an actual encounter going on, a meeting of minds. It is wonderful. And then I think it's interesting. Treebeard trusts the old Lys, and you're mm-hmm. not on them. So, it's an interesting kind of trust. He trusts the old Lys, and you're not one of the living creatures on the list. And I was thinking, it's almost like the OED. You know, you work so hard on people. Many people worked really, really hard on the Oxford English Dictionary, but it was essentially out of print or out of date as soon as the ink hit the pages. Mm-hmm. The language doesn't stay still. And I think it is fascinating to live in a time where the dictionary is now online and can be updated. So the old lists need to go to the cloud so that they can have amendments. How about you? What was your next place?
For me, it actually, just slightly diverting again. So we have his, sorry, this is going to take a little bit of explaining. So we have Treebeard saying, "Fangorn is my name according to some. Treebeard, others make it. Treebeard will do." "An Ent," said Merry, "what's that? But what do you call yourself? What is your real name?" "Oh, now," replied Treebeard, "oh, now that would be telling, not so hasty." And it reminds me of an idea from Madeline L'Engle in one of her books, where in order to love something, you have to know its true name. And okay. So I feel like Treebeard withholding the name is both a acknowledgement that this is an unfamiliar thing to him, but also giving them the chance to discover what his name is and to love him in that context.
Of course, Mary has no trouble giving their names. Mm-hmm. Love that. So he trusts that it is safe to do that.
Yes.
Yes, I love that.
I'm curious if you had any thoughts on the fact that Treebeard seems to trust them more once he finds that they are hole dwellers.
Oh, interesting. I did not notice that. Tell me more.
Pippin says, "Why not make a new line? Half-grown hobbits, the hole dwellers. Put us in amongst the four, next the man, the big people, and you've got it." "That would do. So you live in holes, eh? It sounds very right and proper."
Yeah, I kind of missed that. Thank you. I love it.
And what it reminds me of is actually later in the chapter when he's describing the kind of turn of Saruman, who used to be reckoned among the great, but is now someone with a mind of metal and wheels. He sees the hobbits as inherently good because it's right and proper that they are not builders, they are dwellers. They are people who do not disturb the natural order of things. So I think that speaks to him a lot in terms of him being a shepherd of the forest.
Right. I often wonder about dungeon and tower, whether it should be hobbit hole as the positive thing and tower as the negative. Maybe we could switch that for the second half of Two Towers or something. We'll talk about that.
Yes.
And then it appears as he's talking that he has trust for Gandalf.
Yes.
Especially because Gandalf takes the time to learn about different people. And he's studied the hobbits, he has studied the trees. And so Treebeard trusts him. And I really appreciate that. Well, it's interesting, the Madeleine L'Engle quote, because earlier there's a line here, real names tell you the story of the things they belong to. It's almost corollary to what you just said. And I love that line as well. And I remember meeting someone who actually had a wolf, and we asked him, what's the name? He said, I won't tell you. He should only trust me, so only I know his name. So I thought that was really interesting, that we were not going to be anything other than strangers to that wolf. That was a long time ago, and you're not supposed to have a wolf as a pet. So that's my PSA for the moment. I love Treebeard also saying, I can see and hear and smell and feel a great deal from this. And I forget what he's talking about even there, the story of things, real names. It's I love how he uses his whole senses, all of his senses, to experience things, that his language is not just a verbal one, but kind of a complete sensual language. And so he must trust his senses.
And I love that he kind of he disregards, or he gives lesser value to the names that are shorter for things, because they seem to have an incomplete understanding of what things are. He calls the Lothlorien dream flower, so the translation, rather than the land of the singing, the land of the valley of the singing gold. But his word for the place is Alava Malarumba Kamanda Lind or Burume. So I feel as if that is derived from his many senses and his many appreciations for the nature of things.
It's beautiful. And then he notices that you speak of Master Gandalf as if he was in a story that had come to an end. And Pippin explains, no, the story is continuing. Gandalf has fallen out of it. I just think that's such a lovely way of saying that. That is really beautiful. And let's see, and my next were when they are walking towards Treebeard's home, and he is he carrying them at this point? Yes, he's holding them gently but firmly. What a contrast, being held by orcs. And they feel safe and comfortable, and they feel safe to think and wonder, and they don't have to talk for a while. So I love that sense of trust. And then he talks about, Pippin asks, why did Celeborn warn us against your forest? And Treebeard says, well, some could warn you against Celeborn's forest. And so there is trust as well. When you know something, you can trust it. But when it's exotic or foreign or strange, there can be a lack of trust. So Pippin is now becoming quite the traveler. He has conquered those myths of two places. Where was your next place for trust?
Let's see. This was a slightly further on from that. It is a mid-paragraph. And so he's saying that things have changed, but it is still true in places. And Pippin says, what is true? Treebeard answers, the trees and the Ents. I do not understand all that goes on myself, so I cannot explain it to you. Some of us are still true Ents and lively enough in our fashion, but many are growing sleepy, going treeish, as you might say. And then later on, it says, there used to be some very dangerous parts in this country. There are still some very black patches. Like the old forest away to the north, do you mean? Asked Mary. Aye, something like, but much worse. I do not doubt there is some shadow of the great darkness lying there still away north, and bad memories are handed down. And so there's this sense of institutional suspicion that he has. And I think that throughout the chapter, he grows to almost overcome that, or he realizes that it is not the it's best not to be hasty and to rely on things that he understood in the past rather than experiencing them for himself.
I love how he explains, we do what we can, we train and we teach, we walk and we weed. And so my question for you is, an ant a human who is part tree, or a tree that has consciousness and mobility? What I and again, I'm not basing this on the movies, and I haven't seen this movie, so I don't care. What do you think an ant is based on the author?
Based on actually something that I believe Legolas will say at some point, but it's that the elves were the ones who awoke with the trees. And so the trees are themselves trees, but they are imbued with the spirit of consciousness and sentience. And so they are definitely trees with the conscious thought and a personality.
And an ability to move. I like that. Mm-hmm. Uproot and move. I like that. Yes, elves. Well, it says, he even says, elves began it, of course, waking trees up and teaching them to speak. And then it's interesting that the trolls are a corruption of ants.
In yes.
The same way that the orcs are a corruption of elves. And oh, I love this line. I used to spend a week just breathing.
I could use that kind of week right now.
Use that kind of week. And I love how they, you know, they're still such strangers. They're in his home and he thinks he's going to go to sleep. He says, so I better stand up. Where will you stand? I love that. So, and I don't want to skip over any places of trust. It's sweet. He does ask them, he asks the hobbits, do you ever see any ents around there? Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen any ent wives? And it's so sweet that he now trusts them enough to ask and reveal this part of his story. And he is missing his love and all the ant wives. It's so sad. Sweet. And I love the expression by root and twig. I'm going to use that all the time now.
I love that when we do reach his home, but we have these two great trees stood there, one on either side, like living gateposts, but there is no gate save their crossing and interwoven boughs. As the old ant approached, the trees lifted up their branches and all their leaves quivered and rustled. And so there's just this great respect and trust that the trees have towards this tree herder.
That's lovely. I love that. What was next for you?
Let me flip a couple of pages.
Oh, I know. We've got a lot in this chapter.
Well, may not find it surprising that I find a moment of hospitality in the chapter, where on the right side of the hay, there was a great bed on low legs, not more than a couple of feet high, covered in deep and dried grass and bracken. Treebeard lowered himself slowly onto this, with only the slightest sign of bending at his middle, until he lay at full length, with his arms behind his head, looking up at the ceiling, upon which lights were flickering like the play of leaves in the sunshine. Merry and Pippin sat beside him on pillows of grass. Now tell me your tale and do not hurry, said Treebeard. And so the guest writes that he's had to hear, he's a sucker to them. He's taken them in, he's fed and watered them, basically. And so now he is able to ask them to contribute to his knowledge again as well.
I like that. And that he does lying down. That's not where he spends the night, but he is, and then he's more at eye level as well. So I like that as well. I didn't really think of that till you were reading it, that he's now not towering over them, but he doesn't sit, of course. He stands or lies down. I thought it interesting when he responds to them, tells them about being used to trusting Saruman in the past. But that is over. But he was polite, always asking my leave, always eager to listen. And then it dawns on Treebeard, oh, I'm always telling him things. He's not telling me. I cannot remember that he ever told me anything. And he got more and more like that. He became like windows in a stone wall with the shutters inside. I love that description. So it's trust that's then broken not by anything necessarily done, but just noticing the imbalance in the relationship. I thought that was touching.
Well, I found that there was a moment where this really foreshadows the end of the chapter. Mm-hmm. In when Mary says, "And what about yourself?" "I have not troubled about the Great War," said a Treebeard. "They mostly concern elves and men. That is the business of wizards. Wizards are always troubled about the future. Mm-hmm. I do not like worrying about the future. I am not altogether on anybody's side because nobody is altogether on my side, if you understand me. Nobody cares for the woods as I care for them, not even elves nowadays." And so he's showing here, at least for me, that he has trust that grows from shared stewardship or from a caring for the same things. Mm-hmm. And I think that will definitely lead to the Entboot's decision at the end to march on Isengard. Sorry if that's a spoiler for anyone.
Well, it's within the chapter that they depart. So
yes.
We know they get to the edge by the end of the chapter. So I don't think they turn back. Yes. I love it when he makes his decision, because once he does, he does. "I will stop it," he boomed. And this is where his beard stood out stiff as a great chasm. Our roads go together to Isengard. So there is the trust again. It's not necessarily taking sides, but we have a mutual interest. We are both going to go there. I will take you there. You're not going to have to walk or worry about food or other danger. We are going together. So I liked that. And then it's, I think it's sweet and trusting of Pippin when he's talking about having lost the Entwives and there have been no Entings. Pippin says, "How very sad. How was it they all died?" And I see him feeling safe enough to be foolish, to ask a stupid question. "They did not die," said Treebeard. "I never said died, we lost them." So I liked that Pippin is free to be a fool finally after a while.
Though I think it grows out of very not necessary, but very natural, not necessarily curiosity, but concern.
It does.
So absolutely. I feel like it's less a foolishness than if he understands that someone is in distress, he wants to understand the reason for that distress.
It's just that he jumped ahead.
Yes.
Who died and not asking how was it that they were lost, but that's okay. That's okay. It's Mary who then has the manners. "Well, I'm afraid the songs have not come west over the mountains to the Shire. Won't you tell us some more or sing us one of the songs?" And this is an exhausting day. They have just run away from orcs. They have walked a great distance on their own and then found Treebeard and then had to, you know, all of this day, and Mary still has the decency and politeness to say, "Please tell us more." I just think that's so sweet. So we start to hear the story about the Entwives and how they gave their mind to lesser trees. I beg to differ. And to the meads in the sunshine beyond the feet of the forest, and they saw the sloe in the thicket and the wild apple and the cherry. So to me, it's about domesticating plants. Would you say, as opposed to a wild forest, that this is about some kind of domestication?
Definitely. And actually, the difference between the Ents and the Entwives with the guardianship of the trees versus the guardianship of the gardens reminds me of the idea of ministry, which derives from a word for the small things, basically. And so it's attention to the lesser things of the world in Treebeard's estimation, but it's no less valuable in my opinion. And I think that he has realized that himself, where he has this regret that they cannot find each other again yet. And in the books, I don't think we ever get an answer to whether or not they will find each other, but he looks to this idea that there will find somewhere a land where we can live together and both be content.
Well, what's sad is the mention of the brown lands, and it makes me think that it's not going to be, and it's heartbreaking, but he can live with that hope. He does not know that for sure. I saw some trust in where he says the Entwives desired order, and it's an interesting thing to trust order. It's not necessarily trustworthy, but some people do, and some people cling to that, and and they want order and they want consistency, and they are very flustered and flummoxed and befuddled and all of that when things are not ordered. So I think that is an interesting way to look at trust, where they desired order and plenty and peace, and that meaning that things should remain where they had set them. And that doesn't always work. So it's sad. It is sad. I think for me, the next, is when the singing the song, we used to open today, puts Treebeard in mind of old times. And I almost thought that I was talking to young Entings. So he has come to a place of trust where he's almost thinking that Merry and Pippin are like his children. That's darling.
Oh, it's such a wonderful moment of kinship, because he has been, to use a more modern phrase that we probably find in an online dictionary these days, but othering them for the first part of this chapter, and yet at this point where they have been able to share the kind of emotional saga of the Ents and the Entwives, he has taken them as his own. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's really lovely that he has brought them into his own civilization through all of this. And it also most reminds me of how Bilbo becomes part of the company of Thorin Oakenshield through the song about the far over the misty mountains cold.
Lovely comparison. After they leave in the morning, for a while they felt faintly the sense of stifling that they had noticed when they first ventured in. So I just point that on. It soon passed. When was your next place of trust?
Trying to find my mark. It's for several pages because I really not exactly skip over the Ent mood, but I give it as a natural thing that the Ents are trusting each other, and they are trusting the hobbits to not get into too much trouble when they are concerned with other things.
And that they're fine with Bregelard, is that his name?
Yes.
They're fine with him.
Right, and it says on that section about Bregelad, still it is no use denying we shall be here a long time yet, a couple of days very likely. So I brought you a companion. He has an ent house nearby. Bregelad is his elven name. He says he has already made up his mind and does not need to remain at the moot. He is the nearest thing among us to a hasty ent. You ought to get on together. And so I love that he has a he gives them a fellowship between the races by finding something that they have in common.
Right.
Even if it's slightly chiding them for being hasty on both sides.
Well, and his name, in fact, might be Hasty. Quickbean.
Yes.
So he's it's almost like calling somebody Doubting Thomas or something like that, that there's a little bit of shade in the name.
Though I remember there's the idea of the quickening or the quick people who are alive with that word. And so Quickbeam might just be a reference to his sentient nature.
It's better than calling him sappy. I love that whenever Bregelard saw a rowan tree, he halted a while with his arms stretched out and sang and swayed. Oh, I'd like to have a day like that too. Oh my goodness. Isn't that beautiful? And I love his passage on the rowan trees in his home. It took root when I was an Enting. That's why I'm not wholly convinced that these are conscious trees, but are more like a kind of man who is tree-like. I'm not trying to argue or be right or wrong, and I'll do more research, but I just see that these are people who would never be rooted. They could always walk around, and that's a distinction for me, apparently, to a tree. So I could be wrong, and I'm sure I have more reading to do.
Well, for me, I again have read way too many books, in my opinion, and therefore I'm thinking, well, yes, there's the idea of the Ents and the idea of the horns, but then we also have the Greek and in C.S. Lewis, the references to the dryads, the people who are spirits of the trees who take human form. And so that is what I thought of when you asked about it, that originally.
They are tree spirit.
Yes.
Okay. It's marvelous.
I think we can live with it, disagreeing on things once in a while, though.
I'm not even sure we're disagreeing. I really don't know. And it's becoming my headcanon, so nobody else has to agree with me. But I will do more reading for sure. There are books on the way. And then, yes, the quiet when the moot is over implies to me that this trust has blossomed. They have made their decision, and we know what's going to come. And then there's the crash, the ringing shout. Trees quivered and bent as if a gust had struck them.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa. I like that. I want to see that. And now we have a song about going to Isengard, and they are marching. And I like Bregalad, his eyes are shining. This is what he wants too.
Mm-hmm.
And now they are on their way. Where else did you find trust?
Well, first of all, I appreciate you pointing out the excitement of Bregalad, and this is what he wanted. But it reminds me of people who have the wisdom to accept the decisions of others, whether they were made quickly or whether it took them time to develop the mm-hmm. sense of urgency that they have felt from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, it is to Isengard, though Isengard be ringed and barred with doors of stone, though Isengard be strong and hard, as cold as stone and bare as bone. We go, we go, we go to war, to hew the stone and break the door, for bull and bow are burning now. The furnace roars, we go to war. To land of gloom with tramp of doom, with roll of drum, we come, to Isengard with doom, we come, with doom, we come, with doom, we come. So they sang as they marched southwards. And mm-hmm. this is a wonderful, just, it's an example of faith and trust in a cause for me.
Right. Well, and it says a little later, their mind is all on one thing, breaking Isengard. So it just mm-hmm. shows all together, this trust has formed, the chant shows it, they're all marching south. And then they just see more and more joining them. So even the Ents that weren't at the Entmoot, there's more coming. What was happening? Mm-hmm. Where the dim, bare slopes that they had crossed should lie, he thought he saw groves of trees, but they were moving.
Mm-hmm.
That the trees of Fangorn were awake and the forest was rising. So here's trees themselves marching. It is powerful.
If Chad from Texas were here, he would definitely start singing the music from the March of the Ents. I'm half tempted to break away from the computer and go play my piano because I have that sheet music on my piano at the moment. So.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. Well, why didn't
wonderful
you?
Wonderful rendition of it.
Wonderful.
Maybe I'll do that for a special thing on our Facebook group.
Sure. Oh, that would be wonderful. I'd love to hear that. That is great. So have we covered trust?
Oh, I have one final note, and I'm trying to see if I have actually already covered it before. Do you ever find yourself closing a bracket and can't find where exactly you opened the bracket?
Yes.
Ah.
I think I got all mine. Okay.
Sorry, this is a note on the at least twice referenced the Wars of Sauron and the Men of the Sea. And this is actually something that is so ancient that when we talk about the Men of Numenor, those are possibly what I think they're referring to with the Men of the Sea, because the ones who departed under the influence of Sauron and attempted to reach the lands of Valinor were basically, the world was changed in order to prevent them from doing it, and their land was lost.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is such the Ents are not exactly pacifists. They are ones who respond at need, but they have not felt the need for this kind of action since that ancient time when, we have the Men of Numenor, we have the Heir of Elendil, and this is considered to be great spans of time, but mm-hmm. this is their scope for things.
Mm. So the Ents are in the Silmarillion?
I would have to reread the Silmarillion again because I do not remember.
Okay. Well, I'm starting it later today, so we'll get to that. Okay. Shall we move into our sacred practice? Because now we return to Havruta.
Yes.
Excited.
All right, so I'm going back to the preface to the Endwife song.
Oh, I was just going to remind folks that Belchavruta, this would be a method of learning where perhaps two students would or more could discuss together a passage. A passage would be chosen, read, and then a question posed, and then the person posing the question can answer first, and then the responder can answer, and then the discussion can continue from there. So where is your passage?
This is, as I said, slightly before the song about the Ents and the Entwives, and it says, "So the Entwives made gardens to live in, but we Ents went on wandering, and we only came to the gardens now and again. Then when the great darkness came in the north, the Entwives crossed the great river and made new gardens and tilled new fields, and we saw them more seldom." So my question here has to do with Treebeard's current regret or current understanding of things. What lessons do you think he learned from the Ents who have become tree-ish? And how has it informed his current longing for the Entwives?
And what would your answer be?
My answer would have to do with the part where he is talking about it, finding a land where the both can be content. And so I feel like he is understanding that in the same way that he has grown and learned in this long absence, he wishes he knows what the Entwives have learned at this point. And whether both of their understanding can come or can bring them to a place of companionship again.
I am hearing a rift that is too great to repair. Mm. That there was no talk whatsoever of crossing the great river with them. The Ents are not interested in gardens and tilled fields, and that I think becoming more tree-ish for him means becoming more of a forest person, forest being, and less likely to meet the Entwives even halfway. It was fine mm-hmm. when they were a little closer, but when that darkness came through, they took their gardens farther away and they weren't willing to go. So I see this kind of sadness that is not just a geographical separation, but just a way of life, evolutionary separation mm-hmm. as well. And kind of the sadness I'm hearing is of the very idea that you can make order and consistency out of the planet. You don't know when it's going to rain. You don't know if it will be warm enough. You don't know if there will be enough snow in the winter. There can never be that kind of order. Mm-hmm. So the things that the Entwives are striving after, I feel like he sees them as doomed. So that's kind of how I'm hearing that. And he can live in the forest because he's not dependent on something being tilled or managed or grown.
Or tamed.
Or tamed, exactly. Exactly. So I think for him becoming more tree-ish to me sounds like staying wilder, staying more mm-hmm. more rooted in wildness. How does that sound to you?
That sounds like a very sensible thing. And sorry, every time I make a slightly snicker, it's because I remember working on a story that had to do with humans who can turn into birds. And I kept on making jokes about night owls and foul play and things like that. And you seem to be doing the same thing with such sappy jokes as you've had taking root in this chapter.
Well, I think they say that like a maple tree, the sap is running and it's quickening. So I see that combination, but yes, I can make a pun. I can make them with the worst of them.
Well, some of us are trying to branch out from such things.
Oh,
Okay, I'm going to stop now.
Right, well, this has been a ton of fun.
Anyway, hopefully for our listeners as well as ourselves, well, we're not just laughing at our own jokes.
Well, and let us know, people, what you think of this change in course of the Ents and Ent Wives, and what this means. And I guess I also hear, in a way, not a reliance on heteronormativeness there, that there's something where it's not necessary to be together to live. They're living on. I mean, I understand there's no endings, but that's not an end for them, is having a mate. But he misses his. So that, what a lovely people to get to meet. And again, why I love the passages with Tom Bombadil, because I don't think Merry and Pippin would even have almost liked the forest if they had not learned their lessons well from Tom. All right. Do you have any exhortations for characters?
Oh, my exhortation is for all of us that when we find a great rift, we should consider ways in which we can find a land where we can be content with those we long to be in union with. And this can be people as near as family and as far as people we see as opponents.
Oh, yes.
How about you?
I'm going to just do a shout out to our three hunters. And just if there was some way to send a reassuring thought to them, Merry and Pippin are okay. Merry and Pippin are okay. I know what you've just heard from the riders, but just be strong. It's okay. And we'll find out more next. So.
After all, we still have that hooded and white-haired gentleman who keeps on marauding in the camp of the three hunters. And we have to find out
horses
who
horses are gone. Right, right. We have to find that out. Do you?
What a way to get to episode 50. I mean, that is.
I know. What a great occasion. Okay, okay. And we're going to have a drawing to celebrate episode 50, and that will be chapter 5. Isn't that nice? Because chapter 5 of The Hobbit is such a big deal, and now we're at chapter 5 of Treason of Isengard. And when we have that, we will hold a drawing, so please keep leaving feedback wherever you listen, or just send us an email to asacredfellowship@gmail.com. We love the lively conversation on the Facebook page. So join us there. And do you have a note from the Shire?
I do. It's from our community question that we had this weekend. And let me pull it up.
And I'll just say briefly, because Pippin notices something about Treebeard's eyes, I believe. Was it Pippin who notices it, that they are sad but not unhappy? So my question to the group was, what is the difference for you between sad and unhappy?
And for this, I don't believe we've actually quoted her before.
I don't think
Barney
so.
Jones, who is one of our listeners, said, news of the death of someone, Robin Williams, or a lifelong friend who lives 1,000 miles away, makes me sad. Unhappy crosses a threshold into impacting my life or soul. The isolation of COVID or times in my life or a job or a relationship weren't healthy. That profoundly reminds me of what I was just talking about in my exhortation. So thank you, Marnie, for that insight.
Yes, thank you, thank you. And I really liked everybody's responses. And again, I mean, it's not really a disagreement, but for some people, it was totally different from what other people said. And it's just fascinating, and it's fine, but it's worth asking each other. So how do you mean sad? How do you mean unhappy? And it's worth being careful how we choose. All right, I believe that brings us to the end.
Yes, it does. As always, thank you for spending this time with us, and we look forward to sharing it with you again next week. But in the meantime, may Elbereth protect you. Be of good hope. Namarie.
Namarie.